Before we get into today's podcast, I want to offer you a powerful free resource. We often hear from listeners looking for answers to those who claim God cannot exist for a variety of scientific reasons. But science actually supports the existence of God, which is why I want to offer you a free download called God's Not Dead. It explores scientifically how our own cosmos points to a creator in three clear areas. Again, this powerful resource is yours absolutely free, so why not download God's Not Dead for free right now at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. Now, here's today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis Podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
Over the next few episodes, we're going to be looking at C.S. Lewis as a spiritual mentor, and I'm absolutely delighted to be joined once again by Professor Alistair McGrath, who, like Lewis, was raised in Northern Ireland. He came to faith from atheism, studied at Oxford University, and went on to become a professor there. Alistair has written numerous books on C.S. Lewis, including a seminal biography, C.S. Lewis, A Life. I suppose in many ways, Lewis's initial conversion to Christianity was a slightly academic endeavour. But how did he then begin to personally assimilate his faith? How did it, I suppose, for want of a better phrase, drop from his head to his heart?
Well, that's a great question. And I think it is very, very important for Lewis, because there's no doubt that Lewis's return to faith, when he was sitting all on his own in that room in Magdalen College, in effect, submitting to God, it was quite cerebral in some ways. There was an emotional element to it. But I think really what we see is Lewis realizing that faith is not static. Faith is about beginning a journey, and that journey continues. And what we see Lewis doing is working out how his own distinct gifts, like, for example, his ability to write well, great knowledge of English, his very strong sense of the power of the human voice to communicate and persuade, Lewis began to realize how he used all of these in developing his own distinct approach to Christianity. And that, I think, is important, because if Lewis were talking to us today, I think he'd be saying, look, we all begin our journey of faith in this way at this point, but it doesn't stop there. And in my own case, for example, my own conversion was terribly cerebral. Christianity makes more sense of things than atheism. And then as I journeyed, as I talked to my friends, as I began to read, I began to realize Christianity is really exciting at the emotional level, at the imaginative level, at all these different levels. And I never lost my sense of the academic excellence of Christianity, but I supplemented it, I enriched it. And in many ways, you can see that happening with Lewis as he begins to grow, not simply in the quality of his faith, but also the depth of his understanding of what that faith is all about. And, you know, that's a great challenge to all of us, to think through how we avoid spiritual doldrums, getting stuck. We need to, in effect, find ways of moving on. And very often that involves going deeper into our faith or finding new ways in which we can apply our faith, making it relevant to us and to other people.
Alistair, in what ways did Lewis's conversion change his outlook on life? Because we have writing from before and after, don't we?
Well, we do. And we know that this was a dramatic turning point. This, if you like, was the fulcrum on which his whole life changed. And I think that one of the things that you notice is that when Lewis describes his conversion, it's in rather personal terms. I did this. I went into my room and shut the door, sort of thing. In other words, there aren't any other people involved in that moment, although, of course, there were others who helped him think and brought him to that point. I think what I find so interesting is noticing how after Lewis's conversion, he really begins to develop routines that solidify his commitment. I'll give you one very good example. Lewis, in effect, said, look, now that I've become a Christian, now that I believe, I'm going to show that publicly because that's part of reasserting my new identity. I'm going to go to my college chapel and I'm going to go to a local church, and it's a local parish church in Headington. And, you know, Lewis kept up those habits until he died, you know, basically going to chapel, going to church as a way of establishing a rhythm of life, which was an expression of his faith. And that is something I think that is important, because we do think of Lewis as quite a cerebral thinker, but let's realize Lewis realized the importance of developing rhythms and routines that really help to solidify your engagement with scripture, your engagement with worship, and in effect gave you this specific set of times when you knew you were going to spend time with God.
Alistair, was there a particular point in Lewis's life when he stopped writing apologetic literature and began to write more for the Christian life? And was there a particular reason that he did that, if that was the case?
Well, that's a very good question. I personally think if you look at his move from Oxford to Cambridge, which really happened late in 1954, there are two things going on here. One is that Lewis feels much more settled at Cambridge than he ever did at Oxford. For example, logical positivism was a very powerful movement here in Oxford in the 50s. When Lewis moved to Cambridge, well, it wasn't really there at all. So he didn't have to fight on that front anymore. And so I think Lewis felt that actually he could now begin to reorientate himself. Instead of writing for people outside the church, like logical positivists, he could in effect write books for ordinary believers like himself, in effect saying, here's how we can go deeper into our faith. And so we have some gems like the Four Loves, Reflections on the Psalms, you know, where in effect what Lewis is doing is exploring faith with and for believers. And, you know, many Christians will find those books to speak to them particularly powerful, even though, you know, Surprised by Joy and Mere Christianity also help them as well. But Lewis here is adopting a different tone. It's very much, let's explore this. And Lewis is a friend who's telling you about this in the hope it will help you as well. So I think there is a change there. And some people listening to this podcast may feel that the older Lewis actually is a Lewis that might be more helpful to them than the younger Lewis.
Alistair, C.S. Lewis clearly speaks to normal Christians, everyday Christians, but he also does have quite a profound role to play in speaking to Christian academics. As an academic yourself, what ways would you say that C.S. Lewis speaks specifically to Christian academics?
Well, again, that's a very good question. I think Lewis is a role model for Christian academics, because Lewis, in effect, went through a process of trying to work out where he belonged and what he could do. He didn't want to get ordained or anything like that. He wanted to stay in the academy, but he wanted also to be able to witness and serve within the academy. And Lewis found his own distinct way of doing it by writing books, by speaking. And I think, if I put it like this, writing at a level that might help other academics as well. So I find Lewis a very helpful role model. When I became a Christian here at Oxford, I was all over the place. I didn't know really how to develop my faith. I didn't know how to think about where I was going next. And I discovered Lewis. And really, that, I have to say, that was a pivotal moment in my own spiritual life, because I found someone who seemed to be a bit like me and on my level. I mean, he's obviously a lot better than I am, but he nevertheless was worried about the things I'm worried about. And that helped me a lot. I think that really Lewis is making a very important point, which is that we all need to find where we belong and work out how we can serve in that context. And it's really important that we have Christians in the academy who are thinking about their faith and speaking about their faith. And Lewis is a very, very helpful role model for that, because he knows what the problems are. You can lose your academic respect. You can, in effect, be seen as a kind of Christian apologist rather than a serious academic. And Lewis gives us lots of guidance about how to maintain that balance and be able to speak with integrity in these great academic debates of our time.
Was that his own experience, that actually some of his academic peers didn't take him as seriously as an academic because he was writing popular literature for Christians and around Christian topics?
I think Lewis did find a difficulty with many of his academic colleagues feeling one of two things, and sometimes even both. The first thing was, look, you're meant to be an academic and you're writing these popular books like, you know, Screwtape, you know. I mean, you can't be taken seriously. But more importantly, I think if you are writing as a Christian, surely that that negates any possibility of academic integrity and neutrality. And Lewis, in effect, said, well, look, I'm writing these popular books because I really like doing them. People seem to like reading them. But he recognized there was a problem here. He had to supplement popular books with serious academic books to maintain his integrity as a scholar. And that's why when he published that 700-page long book, Oxford History of English Literature, I mean, it's a massive book, but in effect, that completely restored academic confidence in him. But the other thing is, people don't mind you being a Christian, but you've got to show that you know why you are and be kind of way gracious and respectful about it. Lewis, I think, learned how to do that. So in effect, when he went to Cambridge, this was no longer a problem for him. So there's a lot of things there. And I think if I put it like this, having a role model doesn't mean you adopt somebody and become their clone. It's much more you adopt somebody who's thought these things through for themselves, who will help you think them through for yourselves, and in effect give you lots of helpful thoughts about how you develop your own distinct identity as a Christian academic.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
Did you know that this month marks the fourth anniversary of Premier Insight, the ministry that brings you this podcast? While it's a real season of celebration, there's also a very real financial challenge that must be met this month. Due to rising costs and the pressure of inflation, there's a $35,000 gap that must be closed this month to keep Premier Insight moving forward with strength. That's why I'm asking you to give a special anniversary gift to keep programs like this podcast on the air and equip a generation of Christians to live out their faith with clarity, conviction, and confidence. Simply go to premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. Thank you for your support.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. We've already spoken a little bit about how Lewis spoke about vocation and what we can learn from him. But do you think there's something around the fact that he is a layman speaking about vocation that actually in some way validates work? Is that an important part of his theology, that work really matters, whatever it is you're doing?
It is very important. If we think of Lewis's really close friends, all of whom were busy doing various forms of Christian apologetics, like J.R.R. Tolkien, Charles Williams, Dorothy L. Sayers, they're all lay people. And what I think Lewis is really doing is saying there's a genuine vocation, a genuine calling by God to use these positions as a way of talking about faith with integrity, but also with academic or literary depth. And that, I think, is important because in our own day and age, you know, the number of clergy is going down. The capacity of clergy to engage these questions, I'm afraid, is also going down. And therefore, it may well be that we're looking at literary people or scientific people who are lay people but know what they're talking about and are able to work out what their vocation is, not simply to represent Christianity in their own academic discipline, but actually to be able to use that to speak, if you like, from a wider platform, as Lewis did through books, through broadcasts, now, of course, through podcasts. I think that Lewis, in many ways, is reaffirming the importance of being a lay person. There's a lot lay people can do. They can, in effect, talk about Christianity rather than about my particular church institution or denomination. And that's precious. So I think you're absolutely right to focus on this point. Lewis is, in effect, ideal if you are an ordinary Christian academic trying to figure out how you can not simply live well as an academic, but also have a distinct ministry, distinct calling as an apologist, a pastor, whatever. Lewis, in effect, gives you some very good ideas about what you can do and how you can do it.
Many of those people that you mentioned just there, Charles Taylor, Dorothy L. Sayers, J.R.R. Tolkien, obviously Lewis himself, were in some ways and certainly have stood the test of time as writers. What inspiration can writers draw from Lewis? Because that's clearly an area where he has a lot to say and a lot to offer in terms of inspiration, isn't it?
Well, I think that there are two main things to say here. One is that Lewis, I think, felt that his own attempt to cultivate his writing, there's several points in the letters where he talks about the need to develop his writing style. Lewis doesn't see that as a kind of act of self-glorification, but rather, I'm using this tool. I'm going to make sure I refine it. I use it to its best, because through my writing, I can communicate more effectively. So that is important. If you're a writer or a speaker, Lewis gives you permission to develop your writing style and your speaking style. And again, remember how good a speaker Lewis was. He would hold a room for an hour because he spoke so well. Second point, of course, is very simply this. Learn how you can express yourself in writing using different modalities. For example, it might be fiction, it might be reflection, it might be some sermons. You know, what style of writing or speaking suits you best? But the key point that Lewis is really saying is, look, I found my own little niche. What's your niche? Go and find it and get in there and start doing things. So if you like, Lewis is both a model as to how we do this, but also someone who inspires us to say, this can be done and maybe I can do this as well.
Now, Lewis was obviously writing within a specific time for a specific people group. But do you think he'd have any advice for Christians today about how to live out their faith, whatever context that looks like for them?
Well, I think Lewis, as a literary historian, was very much aware that Christians lived lives in different ways over time. And in each case, they felt this was the right way to do it at this place, at this time. And certainly, if you read Lewis's writings about the Christian life, you'll find that very often you feel, oh dear, that is a bit linked to Britain in the 1940s or whatever it is. And you say, we have to do it differently now. But that's good, because the problem is any writer who is absolutely up to date in his time is out of date later. And so he needs to be replaced. Not abandoned, rather let's do what he did in a different way so we can speak at this time and in this place. And so in many ways, what Lewis is encouraging us to do is to not repeat works that simply locate Christianity in 1940s Britain or whatever, but rather take that risk and say, let's try and locate it right where we are now. And that means you need people who can interpret the Christian faith and explain the Christian faith and live it out and write about it. And again, Lewis did that. But again, you know, we need new people today who can do that in our own day and age.
And obviously, children played an important part in Lewis's life. I mean, he didn't have his own children, but he had the stepchildren from Joy Davidman. But then he also wrote clearly, you know, arguably his most famous works for children. Do you think Lewis would have any advice specifically for children or young people trying to live out their Christian faith in today's society?
Well, I think Lewis remembered his own time as a child with great affection, because that was a period of discovery, wonder, a sort of innocence, you know, and he really felt that the books that he loved during that time were so important. That's one of the reasons why he wanted to write children's books talking about Christianity, because he felt he just didn't have access to Christianity because of the nature of the books he was reading. What Lewis, I think, would say to children is, you are in a privileged position. You can, in effect, discover Christianity at a level and in a way which will capture your imagination. And then as you keep going, you'll begin to add on its ethical depth, its rational depth. All these things can be added. But Lewis would want us to say, you never lose that sense of wonder. In many ways, that's what keeps you going. And that's why Lewis really felt children's stories were so important, because they captured that sense of wonder and amazement at life, which, of course, is so important for thinking about Christianity.
Alistair, do you think there are particular works of Lewis that you'd recommend which are aimed specifically at this area, at the Christian life, or that could be helpful in this area, even if that wasn't necessarily his intended audience when he wrote the books?
I think one of the things we can do is read the Chronicles of Narnia again and, in effect, ask ourselves, here are all these characters, the four Pevensey children, obviously others, even little animals like Reepicheep, you know, and ask, what is Lewis trying to tell us? What is Lewis saying to us about how you live out your Christian faith? What is he saying about people who feel that they are very, very small and yet turn out to be able to make a difference? What is Lewis saying in these characters that we might be able to take to heart for ourselves? Because Lewis, in effect, is not saying, giving us an instruction book, here's what you do. His preferred way of doing this is to tell stories and show us rather than tell us. Show us what virtue is like. Show us what integrity or bravery are like. And so in many ways, reading Lewis's book with that agenda in mind, I think, would help us try and figure out where we go from here.
Well, that leads us very nicely into our next episode, Alistair, where we're going to be talking about the power of story. But thank you so much.
It's been great fun. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.